He hasn't been seen for almost a fortnight. Very strange. I do not know him well, Nielsen said. Don't you? Said Shepherd. He is an acquaintance, but not a friend.
Ah.
Nielsen seemed about to cough. Then he burst out, Are you quite finished, Albert? The clerk set down the coffee pot. Shall I leave the tray, sir? Yes, yes, then go, for God's sake, Nielsen said. He lurched for the cup as it was handed him, causing a small tide of coffee to slop into the saucer, and set it down before him with a clatter. The clerk brought a second cup to Shepherd, who made no move to touch it, and pointed to the desk before him without a word.
I shall say it plain, Shepherd said, when the disappointed clerk had shut the door behind him. I mean to begin work on the jailhouse at once, before the elections, so that when Lauderback takes office, the work is already well underway. I am aware that this may seem to others as if I seek to actively thwart the success of his campaign. I come to you to solicit both your business and your discretion.
What do you need? Nielsen said cautiously.
Materials to build, and perhaps 10 or 20 able bodies to begin digging the foundation, Shepherd said, reaching into his breast for the plans. I can offer you commission at your standard rate. The site has been purchased already and approved. Here is the architect's design.
This is the original or a copy?
Nielsen took the papers from Shepherd's massive hand and unfolded them.
The original.
There is no copy, Shepherd said. I keep these documents on my person always, of course.
Of course, Nielsen agreed, reaching for his spectacles.
The reason I have come to you, Shepherd continued, and not to Cochrane or Morrison or another competitor whose business, forgive me, is faring rather better than yours at present, owes only in part to your reputation as an efficient man.
Nielsen looked up.
Permit me to speak frankly, Shepherd said. The matter is indelicate, I know. I will try and be as delicate as I can. It has come to my attention that you took home a commission to the value of many hundreds of pounds upon closing the estate of Mr. Crosby Wells.
Nielsen started, but Shepherd held up his hand to silence him.
Do not implicate yourself by speaking before you have heard what I have to say, he said. I will tell you exactly what I know. The man's body came through the police camp before his burial. Given that he had no family or friends to speak of, we conducted the wake at the camp itself. I had the solemn honour of viewing his body and of being present while the physician checked his vital organs for signs of harm. Dr. Gillies concluded the cause of death was drink. I, with my slender knowledge of the subject, could only agree with his ruling. Dr. Gillies was careful in his examination of the contents of the dead man's stomach and intestines, however, which contained not only food and spirits, but traces of laudanum. Though not enough, I should add, to warrant undue suspicion. I do not believe that Crosby Wells was poisoned, except by drink. Now, even before the wake was over, Wells' land and mill were sold. The land, as you know, was reclaimed by the bank, and was then purchased almost immediately by a Mr. Edgar Clinch. While the transaction was perfectly legal, it is nevertheless curious how swiftly the property changed hands. I understand that you were then called upon to clear the cottage and sell on the dead man's effects for a fee that would be set against their total value. You accepted this employment, and promptly discovered a great deal of hoarded gold. Where was it hidden? In the flour canister, to the aggregate value of £4,000. A homeward bounder, to use the local phrase. Now, Mr. Nielsen, you ought have then been able to walk away with your percentage, which was by now a very handsome cut. The whole enterprise was thwarted, however, when Mr. Wells' widow landed on the beach and declared herself. She was 1 week too late to attend his burial, but not at all too late to contest the sale of his estate and any transactions that had taken place as a consequence of that sale. As I have said, I do not believe that Crosby Wells was poisoned, Shepherd said, but I also do not believe that the hoarded gold belonged to him, much less to his widow. The apparition of the widow Wells is a curiosity in a tale already rather too curious for my taste. He paused. Have I said anything so far that you know or guess to be untrue? You can decline to answer that if you wish.
You mean to blackmail me? Nielsen managed.
Not at all, Shepherd said. But you must agree this smacks of plotting.
Yes, I do.
I am not a detective, Shepherd said, and profess no inclination towards that field. I care very little about how much you know. But I must have my new jailhouse, and I see an opportunity for both of us to gain.
Speak it, sir.
The widow Wells has made her appeal to contest the sale of her late husband's effects, Shepherd said. The appeal will take months to action, of course, as legal matters do, and in the meantime the money will be held in escrow by the bank. In the end, I expect that the sale will be revoked, and if no greater plot is exposed, the widow will claim the bounder as her own. Incidentally, I've enjoyed several conversations with Crosby Wells these past few months, and he certainly never spoke of being married. Not to me, nor to any other man I've spoken to.
Nielsen had a vision of a cat tapping a small rodent back and forth with the flat of its paw, its claws in sheath. He was not guilty. He had done no wrong, and yet he felt guilty. He felt implicated, as though he had performed a terrible misdeed while sleeping and had woken to find his bolster smeared with blood. He felt certain that any moment now the jailer would expose him, but for what crime he did not yet know. What was the word Pritchard had used? Associated. Yes, he felt that acutely. When he was a small boy, Nielsen had stolen a precious button from his cousin's treasure chest. It was a cuff button from a military jacket, brass in colour, and engraved with the lithe body of a fox, running forward with its jaws parted and its ears cocked back. The button was domed, and greyer on one side than on the other, as if the wearer had tended to caress its edge with his finger, and over time had worn the shine away. Cousin Magnus had rickets and a bandy-legged gait. He would die soon, so he did not have to share his toys. But Nielsen's longing for the button became so great that one night when Magnus was sleeping,